Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Protect your dream home with American Family Insurance. And you can weather any storm. You'll also save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote. Find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Another one is Jack Wilshere. Now, Jack grew up in Hitchin, just down the road from me. There was a nightclub in Stevenage called Chicago's. The night that he made his debut for England at 17, he turns up in the flashiest car you've ever seen.
Right.
Straight up to the door. All right, mate, I'm coming in. Who are you? I'm Jack Wilshere. You might have just seen me. I was playing for England tonight. Oh, yeah. Made your debut. Yeah. At 17. Yeah. You obviously can't come in.
Right.
You're famous for being 17.
Football. Soccer. At the end of the day, football, it's a funny old game. Comedians talking about football.
Comedians talking about football.
Comedians talking about football.
Hello, welcome to the Comedians Talking About Football podcast, a podcast where we do just that. Each episode, a different comedian talks about the lows, the highs, the overpriced pies, and pretty much everything else that comes with supporting a football team. I'm your host, Sam Michael, and I am a comedian.
I played the new FIFA football game recently. Oh, so realistic. You really do feel like a Premier League footballer. I played it for 10 minutes. I actually got cramp in my left calf. I played it for a further 20 minutes. I had a sudden urge to cheat on my wife with a teenager in the back of a Land Rover. You really do feel like a Premier League footballer.
And also a long-suffering Reading FC fan. We've got some fantastic guests for you this season, including Lou Fitz talking about Man City, David Alfie Ward talking all things Tottenham, and Nathan Caton buzzing about Brentford. We're going to start, though, like every single Premier League sticker book does, with the team who always starts the season at the very, very top. That's right, we're talking about the Gunners. My guest for episode one is comedian Jacob Hawley, talking all things Arsenal FC.
I think patron saint of England should be Gary Lineker. I'm a massive football fan, guys, because I too have a void to fill. And I love Gary Lineker, right? I follow Gary Lineker on Twitter, and he's always putting really nice things about how this country should be doing more for refugees. That's something that I agree with. It's something you may disagree with. Even if you do, you have to admire such a right-footed footballer positioning himself on the left so frequently. Thank you, lads.
Jacob Hawley, thanks for coming on, mate.
Thanks for having me, man.
Now, we first met, we were talking about it just before we started recording, back around late 2016.
Is that when it was?
It would have been around late 2016. We met at the Jericho Cafe.
Yes.
For the brilliant Jericho Comedy Night. That was 2016, mate. That season, Arsenal finished second. Just going to put that there for a minute.
That was the Leicester season, wasn't it?
Yeah. That's true. And since I first met you, we've gigged a few times since then, and you've come and done two previews at my night, which has been great fun.
Yeah.
And I've seen you. Obviously, you got to the final of the BBC New Comedian of the Year.
Yeah.
In 2017, you've had some great successful shows at Edinburgh. You've got a great podcast.
Thank you.
And I've seen you appear on sporadically on things like, you know, BBC Three Shorts and Ladhead recently.
Yeah,
saw you appear in there. Is it safe to say, Jacob, that as your career's gone up, Arsenal's success has gone down.
I wondered where that was going. It has. Do you know what? It's a funny one to look back at. Actually, I don't want to say it has, as if I've been massively. I've done all right, but I mean, it's a funny one looking back at that season, because at the time it didn't feel like we were that good.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? Because I think back then we were still looking at it within the context of, obviously, Wenger was still there.
Yeah.
We were still sort of judging him on his past achievements and going, oh, it's rubbish, man. That was the first season. So that was the last time we finished in a Champions League place.
Yeah.
So that would have been around the time we're going, oh, we only ever finished top four. We never really were. And we came so close that year, man.
Yeah.
I think I remember that January window, that January transfer window. I mean, I've said this every transfer window for nearly 17 years now, that we need a holding midfielder and a centre-back, and we still need a holding midfielder and a centre-back. But that was the one where it was like, oh, my God, if we could just get someone in,
yeah,
that could be the year that we... I mean, yeah, we came second. We came, and I think, look at that. I mean, it's a crazy season, that one, 16-17, the Leicester season, because I think most top teams look at that and go, well, I mean, Spurs specifically look at that and go, God, we should have won the league that year. We should have won the league that year. Arsenal should have won the league that year. And looking back now, a season where Ozil, that's probably the last one where he was close to his best. Mm. Sanchez was absolutely at his best.
Yeah.
Koscielny was one of, in my opinion, the best centre-backs in Europe. Giroud, I think, criminally underrated as a really useful centre forward. Maybe not a 30 goal a season striker like Aubameyang, but yeah. And then since then, obviously Wenger left. Emery came in. I think that was a disaster. Really, there are people who look at Emery's reign and go, "Oh well, we came close." It's like,
right.
And you look back at those hazy days of 2016 and go, God, it was nice when we used to just finish top four all the time.
Well, you think about that time when you were finishing top four. There was still a lot of shouts for Wenger out at the time. Now, were you ever part of that?
No, I wasn't. And I think there's a few reasons for that. I think I'm 28 now, so so Wenger came in 1997, I think.
It might have been earlier than that.
Even. I think it was maybe 96. So I was about 6 or 7, or maybe younger, maybe 5 or 6. Yeah. So I've only ever known Wenger Arsenal.
Right, yeah.
Right? When I'm young, he wins his double for the first time. When I'm about 12 or 13, we go invincible and win the double again. That's honestly the best age to do that. Like that, like to be able to go into school.
Mm.
You know, and I grew up just outside of North London, so most people were Spurs fans or Arsenal fans.
Right.
And to be part of that, watching Thierry Henry,
you
know, Pires, Vieira, Ljungberg, Bergkamp, you know, to have that when you're 12 or 13 and to recognise Wenger as the man who gave you that, it's impossible to switch on him. You know, by the end, I was like, okay, we do need to move on now, of course.
Mm.
But, you know, I remember winning the FA Cup in, was it 2014? I think we won the FA Cup. That was the first time we broke the trophy drought. And it felt like the good times were back. And again, within the context of things, we were there in a time when City had come out of nowhere with loads of money, Chelsea had loads of money, and we were still finishing top four year in, year out. So I never quite lost it with Wenger. I think the other thing with Wenger as well is that for most of that period where we were, you know, sort of from 2006 onwards, after we lost the Champions League final, we always had a group of young players where you were going to go, he's going to sort them out. They're going to be our new crop. That's going to be the next crop, you know. Where, you know, there was the Danielson, Diaby sort of group. They look brilliant, and I still think Diaby's could be one of our best players we'd ever had if the injuries hadn't wrecked his career.
Fair.
After that, obviously Wilshere, Ramsey, lot, Oxlade-Chamberlain, which you could argue he still got, you know, good careers out of some of them.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that was why the optimism was always there. So I was never what you'd call Wenger out. And I think the problem is that by the time it came to a period where logically we had to move on from the Arsene Wenger reign, Wenger out had become synonymous with Arsenal fan TV.
Yeah.
And you never want to be them. You know, even when they're right, I'd rather be wrong than be in agreement with those people. Do you know what I mean? So... Yeah, I was always on that side of things.
That's fair. I mean, to me, I always felt the Wenger out crowd came around the time that Man City kind of came out of nowhere, like you were talking about earlier. I mean, if you remember kind of in the late kind of 2000s when it was there was the top four, which was Liverpool, Man United, Arsenal and Chelsea.
Yeah.
Arsenal always seemed to get a lot more credit for anything they achieved because they were doing it on a much smaller budget than the other three teams.
Mm.
Then suddenly Man City come in and they start, you know,
changing things.
Yeah, changing things up. You know, the league really did change from the moment they won the league onwards and when all that money came in. Do you think then suddenly a lot of Arsenal fans kind of forgot that the financial situation is very different compared to a Man City and everything like that?
Yeah, I think possibly. I think the other context to throw in there is that in 2006, it was the stadium. That's when we moved to the Emirates. And then moving to I think it's 62,000 seat stadium was like insane. The you know, jumping from Highbury, and I prefer Highbury. I think all of us prefer Highbury. Highbury was incredible. The Emirates still feels a bit corporate, stale. You know, it's not quite there. But that was a big thing. Moving, and also back in 2006, the only way you became one of the biggest spenders, one of the biggest forces in Europe, was having a stadium that brings you in revenue. So we had to do it. Then, exactly as you say, suddenly, Abramovich came to Chelsea, I think, 2004. But City, again, you know, and you look at now, Everton have got, you know, billionaires bankrolling them. There's loads of teams. They're talking about Saudis taking over Newcastle. That'd be another one. So it's when we did that stadium move, which meant that we were, like, skint for years on end, you were, at the time, you sort of went, well, it's fair enough because we've done it to get the stadium. You have to do it. But then, exactly as you say, City come along. Not only have they got the money where they wouldn't need a big stadium, but like that, they move from Main Road to the Etihad.
Of course.
So it's without any debt, without any baroness. So, I think the sort of the City effect and the Chelsea effect and the effect that had on football did absolutely change the way that people looked at Arsenal.
Speaking of the stadium, the Emirates does get a bit of a reputation for being quiet, I think, you know, among people who have visited there and what have you. Do you think that is a growing problem? Like you said, a lot of these teams are having to move to bigger stadiums if they want to be competing at the top level. West Ham have done it recently. Tottenham have... I'd argue Tottenham are in that bracket as well, even though they're kind of built on the same area.
Yeah.
And do you think that can cause a problem? Because, like you said, the Invincible season took place, you know, at... the original ground at Highbury, and that making that jump can affect a team for quite a while. I think, I've been to West Ham. My first ever game was at West Ham, Upton Park, back in 1993 or whenever it was. And I remember the noise. I mean, it would have been louder because I was young, but you know, it was a real amazing atmosphere. And then I've also been to the London Stadium.
Have you been to London Stadium?
Yeah, and it's hard because you used to know at these older places, same as it was at Highbury, where the proper fans were. Do you know what I mean? The loud fans who would stand all game and you could see them. And you used to see it on Match of the Day, even at West Ham, you could just see, right, that wall there, there. And when I went to the London Stadium, I think this was in their second season there, there was patches of stood fans. And to me, it takes a while for a stadium, the bigger it is, the longer, to kind of get that proper fan base back.
And I don't think West Ham would do it there. I think they're in a fortunate position where they're essentially paying a lease rather than they don't actually own that stadium. So if they wanted to, they could do something else. Because I think this is the problem. I don't know whether Arsenal will get there. I don't think West Ham will get there. City have got a problem with it. But then the flip side is Chelsea have a problem with it. I've been to the Bridge a couple of times. That can be really, really quiet. Yeah. I personally think it's a larger problem which isn't necessarily to do with just the size of the stadiums. I think it's the price of the tickets.
Yeah.
I think old-fashioned fans are getting priced out. And the problem is, it's not their fault, but the seats are getting filled with business people, tourists, and it's just not the same. And it's never going to be the same. And the weird thing you've got on an economic level is that actually you'd imagine bigger stadiums, more seats, demand technically lower, should be able to give away cheaper seats.
Yeah.
But it's not the way it's worked. It's actually more expensive. So good... fan, like old-fashioned fans who sing a lot can't afford to go anymore. You know, I sit where we sit in the Emirates, and so often we got like a row in front of us of these old school cab drivers.
Right,
they haven't enjoyed a game since about 83. Like they love not enjoying it. But they're there. But then around us, it's you know, people who come in and have a little and then go out, and then it's not so. I don't think it's just Arsenal that are going to have that problem. I think we're probably one of the first ones because we made that move to the bigger stadium.
Okay.
I know Spurs are having the same problem. Mm. I know that Chelsea are having the problem at Stamford Bridge now, so it's not necessarily having a big ground. I think it's a London problem.
Yeah.
I think it's going to infect football, mate. I do think it's an issue. I think the only way you get it back, and I really hope this gets sorted, is safe standing.
Okay.
I really hope they get a safe standing because you look at what that's done for Germany.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at Dortmund, it's insane.
Yeah.
And most of that's safe standing. And also, you can offer it so cheap. I mean, I think you can get tickets to Dortmund in the standing area for €15.
Blimey.
And that would just fill it with people. Yeah. Fill it with people who would go every week, you know, and it would sort the game out.
How much is a season ticket at Arsenal?
I think it's about £12.50. I don't pay that because I've got a mate who works for the club.
Right.
So we get about 30-40% off.
Okay.
It's still a crazy amount of money.
Yeah.
It works for me because I can kind of, a few times a year if I'm away gigging or whatever, I can sell my ticket.
Right.
And that basically pays for it. I mean, I missed the Spurs game in August, September. I've got, you know, £120 for the ticket.
Nice.
So you think that's... You know,
but that's the thing, isn't it? £120.
Yeah, it's mad. For a ticket to football. It's mad. It's mad. It's absolutely nuts. Who can pay that? I mean, it's really, really bad, and I don't know what the answer is. I don't know how you fix it apart from safe standing. I think safe standing is the smartest way to do it, and I think you know what it's like. I've been to games where it's freezing cold. You end up, and if it's 0-0, you end up sat down most of the game. You're not singing. You're not. Whereas, you know, the big games, I mean, we don't really have enough big games anymore. But when we do get them, you're standing up for most of it.
Yeah.
That gets people singing, that gets people shouting, and it makes it a better atmosphere. So hopefully that's what they'll introduce.
So you mentioned earlier you've always remembered Arsene Wenger being manager of Arsenal up until he left.
Yeah.
So when did you get into football? When did you become an Arsenal fan? You mentioned you live north of London?
Yeah, so I'm Stevenage, so I'm just outside. So, a lot of people... Well, actually, David, there was a lot of United fans around. I mean, there's always...
Wherever you are, there's United fans,
yeah. You go to Indonesia, you find it, United fans. So I've played football from about 7 years old, I'd imagine. First, this is such a weird way of getting into a team. I mean, it was a slight local thing, and I remember my dad wanted me to support Arsenal purely because my granddad was a Spurs fan, my mum's dad.
Okay.
So my dad thought it would be funny to make me an Arsenal fan.
Well, did your dad support Arsenal?
No, he doesn't really ask about football.
Oh, okay.
He doesn't really care, but he just thought it'd be funny to wind up my granddad by making me an Arsenal fan. And also, I remember the first game of football I ever watched was Arsenal-Chelsea 1998. Ljungberg scored the winner.
Right.
I didn't like the colour red. I was about 7 years old. I didn't like the colour red. I thought it was an aggressive colour. Never liked anything red. So I was like, I'm going to support the blue team. So I actually wanted to support Chelsea. Problem is, I didn't know which team was which.
Okay.
So I got confused. So I was like, I like the blue ones. Arsenal. So, mate, I was that close to being a Chelsea fan.
We could be here talking about Chelsea, yeah.
We could be sat here talking about Chelsea. But yes, that's how I got into it. And then I supported them ever since. And I got to go to a couple of games at Highbury when I was younger. Fortunately, through sort of meeting people and a bit of work and stuff, I've been a season ticket holder for the last 3 seasons now. But I like to think that if I was to look at football, Arsenal would have been the team I liked. I always like the way they play. I like the way they bring through young players. Obviously, it's a London team, so it makes sense for me to support a London team.
Because there is that local aspect of it, is it? It's very easy to get to.
To
an Arsenal game 20, from Stevenage, from you know.
Yeah, 20 minutes on the train. So it's obviously. My local team really would be either Luton or Stevenage.
But I
used to go to Kenilworth Lane a few times to watch Luton, and I saw Stevenage a few times. But Arsenal felt local enough.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, I used to live in Cambridgeshire, and a lot of Arsenal fans there.
It's like less than an hour on the train, isn't it? So it's. I always felt like I just had enough where I was supporting a team that were good enough, but also like all my mates at school who were either United or Liverpool, I could say like, why do you? Why they've always got some bollocks, you know. My granddad's got a mate from the pub who went to Manchester once in the '80s, so now I support Man United.
There's nothing better than asking a Man United fan why, and they go, "Well, my dad supported them from a young age." Yeah. Oh, is he from Manchester? No, Southampton.
Yeah.
You know,
absolute bollocks.
So that's it. And before today I asked you, you know, what was your proudest moment as a as an Arsenal fan? And you, I thought you were going to mention the Invincibles year, but you, something you brought up was Thierry Henry's return in 2012.
That was my happiest one.
Oh, your happiest?
That was the happiest one. That was the one where... And it, but that was because... So in the context, it was, it's context that made that so happy, because in 2012 we had been suffering. You know,
yeah,
we,
you had
we had
been,
yeah. been shit for a little while, you know. I think it was the year before that, 2011, that I thought we were going to win the League Cup,
right,
and we messed it up. It was Koscielny and Szczesny made a mistake. So 2012, when Henry came back, that was... I mean, and you know, he was my hero. He was my... I remember when I used to play when I was younger, I'd try and play like him. I'd cut in from the left onto my right foot. I'd even sort of like sort of pout my lips the way he did when he was playing. Like, I used to try and do everything just to be like Henry. So him coming back, and you know, he came back and it's like, oh, he's been in America. Is he fit? Can he still do it? I can still remember the goal. Like, you know, Alex Song had the ball.
Yeah.
He's such a weird player, Alex Song. He was the strangest player we've ever had. Like, he's this sort of like unorthodox centre-back who we sort of pushed into midfield just because no one else in our midfield could tackle. And yet out of nowhere, he just like... bring out these beautiful like through balls, and yeah, it's just he just split the defence. You know, one pass that went through the middle of the right back and the centre half, and then Henry's there. And as soon as he takes that first touch, you can see on the pitch where he is. He opens up his body.
Yeah,
you know where the finish is going. And yeah, I was in a pub in central London with all my mates watching that, and I just broke down in tears. I just broke down in tears because I remember him leaving.
Of course, yeah.
When I was, you know, 12 or 13, whatever, when he left, maybe a bit older, maybe about 13, 14. I remember, like, heartbroken. Because
yeah.
It was over, you know? And he'd been at Arsenal since 1998, 1999.
Yeah.
I'd grown up with him, being my hero, being, you know, he went from his kid from France, can he deliver, to the Premier League's best player. I personally think probably the best player to never win the Ballon d'Or.
Okay, that's fair.
You know, not just a striker either. Like, I think he still holds the assist record in the Premier League. Like, this unbelievable footballer became our captain. And when he left, it was just heartbreak. I remember he did a message on the website sort of saying goodbye and saying thanks to the fans. To get that back and to get a little... They always say you can never have back the things that you enjoyed as a child. But to get it back and to actually feel like, oh, this is actually real. This is what it was. This isn't a cheap imitation. This is Henry. Like ghosting through, right foot curling it into the bottom corner.
Yeah.
You know, without wanting to get too Freudian, I'd been given for a brief second. I'd been given my childhood back.
Yeah,
and so that was nuts. That was even like I would put it above like the Invincibles and everything like that, because you know the Invincibles, I was like 13. It was great, but I didn't really understand how rare that was. I didn't. You know,
you were just enjoying the wins.
I was just enjoying the wins. I just thought anything was possible. You know, I'd never had a bad time as a football fan. So I was like, I didn't know. I thought this could just go on forever. Maybe we'll be invincible next year.
Yeah.
Well, we should be winning the Champions League. Like, yeah. So that was for me probably one of my happiest memories as an Arsenal fan.
I remember watching that. I remember the stadium just erupting as well when it happened. And I really enjoyed that goal because I was watching it with a really horrible Leeds fan.
There's a lot of them, isn't there?
I'm probably going to have to interview one at some point, so that's going to be fun, isn't it?
Rob Mulholland is a Leeds fan.
Is he? Oh, man. Yeah, I remember watching it with him and just watching his fat face drop, and it was beautiful. It was beautiful. And everyone there who was a neutral wanted to see that, because it was that whole thing as well. I think a lot of people watching that game, the FA Cup game, and thinking, if you see an old player come back, you talked about it being your childhood coming back. It was our childhood as well. We all remember watching him on Match of the Day, remember watching him on the telly and stuff, and you know, World Cup 98 as well, and seeing him just do that at that peak was just great. It was
He was one of those rare players, and you don't get many of them, where every fan, as you say, in the Premier League would look forward to Match of the Day to see what he's done. I mean, I had it with Cristiano Ronaldo at United, loved it. Recently, De Bruyne would be the one I'd pick out now, where Match of the Day, I go, I can't wait to see what he's done this week, you know? So I think you're right. I think most neutrals watched Henry that night and went, oh my God, just for tonight, it's back, you know?
I'm going to talk about another moment you might consider quite a proud one. It was may have been Arsene Wenger's one of his last great kind of moments, and one I hate talking about. And that was the League Cup comeback against Reading. in 2012.
The Marouane Chamakh masterclass. I think Theo got four that night.
Theo got four. Theo always scores at the Medeski. He always scores at Medeski. And
what a weird footballer.
I was going to mention him as well, actually, because Walcott was kind of seen as the next, you know, that Thierry Henry, when he was subbed off in his last game, he had a moment with him, didn't he?
Yeah.
And then Walcott took the 14 shirt, and he was supposed to be the next Henry, and it obviously didn't quite work out for him.
No.
But yeah, going back to that game, I mean, that was, for me, a horror for Reading, that game.
So that was a scalp for you, wasn't it? I'd have been a big scalp to knock us
out. Oh, yeah, and also it was we were in the Premier League at the time, and we were like underdogs in the Premier League, and I think that knocked our confidence, because we realised that going 4-0 up against a Premier League team means nothing. We can still lose.
Who was your manager at the time?
It was Brian McDermott.
Was it Brian McDermott?
Yeah.
I thought it was...
But I mean, that was quite incredible because, I mean, it was a massive comeback, but I think only the year previous, or less than a year previous, was almost the same had happened to Arsenal, where they were 4-0 up and then Newcastle came back to win 4-0. Tiote's
goal at the end, wasn't it? Yeah.
And do you remember that night watching it where Arsenal came back to win 7-5? From being 4-0
down. It was one of those games where, because it went into extra time, didn't it?
That's it,
And I remember just thinking, it was. And it's strange talking about this in a week where we just lost an extra time to Olympiacos.
Yeah.
But it was one of them where going into extra time, it was just like, God knows what's going to happen. God. But this is kind of what characterised those Wenger teams in those years. You had no idea. Like, we were just as likely to score 7 goals in 120 minutes as we were to lose 4-0 in 90.
Right.
So it was just bonkers.
And it was mad.
It was absolutely nuts. And you look back now and you go, fair play to Wenger. Mm. I mean, I've heard people sort of looking back retrospectively at Mourinho's United when they finished second and going, wow, we finished second with those players.
Mm.
Arsene Wenger had Marouane Chamakh playing that kind of football. Like, yeah. It was nuts, man. Like, and I remember that game, and it you know, those League Cups were quite funny because there was a time when they would really just be for the kids. I remember Henry Lansbury playing in there. I remember Fran Merida, players like that. By that point, we were bad enough. It was like, get Walcott playing, get Chamakh playing. But yeah, that was a crazy night. I mean, it probably meant more to you as a Reading fan. Do you know what I mean? Because as I say, that would have been a big scout.
Oh, it would have been huge. I mean, we were 4-0 up in 40 minutes, and we thought this is
we've torn them apart.
Amazing.
Torn them apart. I mean, I can't remember who would have been in our defence then. I've got a feeling that was in the Bue year.
It could have been, yeah.
But I mean, we were just such a mad team, and it must have been so difficult for people to analyse us back then. You know, like pundits and stuff must have looked at that team and gone, like, what do you say?
Well, if I remember it right, I remember watching it at the time, and at half time, they were all talking about Wenger's future. At half time, they're talking about what Wenger's fall from grace, basically, at half time being 4-0 down to Reading. And then at full time, 7-5, they're talking about, well, this is the sort of thing Wenger can do. It's that fickle thing of
exactly.
But it was so weird to see that, because as I said, a year before that, the same thing had happened. Oh, wow, you know, Arsenal up at half-time.
4-0 up
and then they've just gone and drawn 4-0.
Yeah, I've got to remember that. I remember one of my mates ripping it out of me for that. But this is the problem, is that, for so long, we have been a freak team who anything could happen. And, you know, especially under Wenger, we just had the attacking potential where you couldn't really write us off.
Yeah.
Now, it's different. Like, it is really different now. You know, you look at the attacking options we have now, arguably they're better.
Mm.
Lacazette, Pepe, Aubameyang, you know, Ozil, Martinelli, Nketiah, Saka, who's come through, looks incredible. But we're not, you know, if we were 4-0 down at Reading now, I'll tell you now, we're not qualifying. You know what I mean?
I'd love us to just score 4 goals in any game ever, to be honest, mate. I'd be happy with that. One thing you said as well, you mentioned that one of the lowest points was Arsene Wenger's 1,000th game against Chelsea and the loss there.
What was that? Was that 6 or was it 4? I can't remember. I mean, I remember Hazard just tore us to shreds. I never liked playing Chelsea.
Do you think that was quite a poignant moment at that point?
I think there'd been a couple. I think the 8-2 is the one that a lot of people pick out. But I think there was something about the Chelsea one. There was the fact it was Mourinho, and there was, you know, Hazard, who we were linked with for 7 years. I mean, I was one of them. I'd always read the gossip column on BBC Sport. Mm. And, you know, for years I was reading about Hazard. Apparently, you know, he went to Chelsea instead, and he ran rings around us that day. He absolutely tore us to shreds. I think Bellerin went off early with an injury, and it was... it was, you know, it was just everything that every sort of criticism that anyone could have had at Arsenal kind of came home to roost that day. We were soft. We were getting pushed around. We were weak. Wenger looked lost, absolutely lost. And, and the problem is, like, a big part of why, as I said earlier, like, I'd like to think I'd support Arsenal regardless of where, you know, my dad wanted me to do it because it would wind up my granddad or whatever. But, like, I like Wenger as a man.
Yeah.
I really like him as a man. I think you listen to some of his interviews, he's so frighteningly intelligent. And it was just hard. It was hard watching this guy who'd, you know, say what you like about him, he'd put everything into that job. You know, he bled for that club. It's hard watching him get humiliated, really. You know, and I think that was the one where he pushed Mourinho on the touchline. I think that's he squared up to him and pushed him. And I think that's the only part of that game I enjoyed. Yeah, that was heartbreaking. The thing is, over the years, we've had those results. And we've almost got used to them. Like, you know, I remember Bayern Munich just, you know, taking the mick out of us. You know, United did it. City have put some bad results over us over the years. You do get a little bit numb to it, but I think because of the occasion, that one just stung. Really, really stung. And it was, I think that for me was probably when I went, yeah, we've got to move on.
Really?
For his sake.
Yeah.
For his sake. It was, you know, to bring in a bit of a boxing analogy, someone had to throw the towel in for him.
Right.
Because he just couldn't, you know, whether it was the players not listening, the board not backing him in the transfer window, I think football moved on.
Do you think, yeah, that's what I was going to ask. Do you think he struggled with the way football had become in the 2010s? Because, you know, he was the masterclass from the late 90s all the way through to the 2000s. But as football changed going, like, did you think he struggled to keep up with that?
I think defensively, yeah. I think if you look at what Pep's got his teams doing, what, you know, funnily enough, Arteta's got our team doing now.
Yeah.
The kind of discipline, the kind of manager Wenger was about getting really good players on the pitch and blowing as much smoke up their arse as possible and going, you trust yourself, you know what to do, do your thing, it's going to be great.
Right.
When you've got brilliant players, not even just your kind of, you know, your Vieira or Henri Bergkamps, but your Van Persies, your Sanchez's, your Ozils when they're on form, your Fabregas's. When you've got them, you can say that to them. When you haven't got them, when you've got your Coquelins, your Mertesackers, I'd say, you know, your Clichés, players who are decent, but they need to be told what to do, where to stand, and especially off the ball. I don't know whether it was Keown or Savage, there was a BBC pundit who made the point, they were like, with the ball, Arsenal can still do a lot of good stuff. Without the ball, they're probably the worst team in the league. And I think that was the case for maybe the last 3 or 4 years of Wenger's reign.
So Wenger goes, and in comes Emery. Mm. How did you feel at the time? Were you optimistic?
No, I have to be honest. I was always a bit like, oh, this doesn't feel right.
Who did you want to come in?
I always wanted Ancelotti.
Okay.
I remember at the time, it looked like we were going to get Arteta. There was talk of Henri, there was talk of Vieira. I just thought, with everything that was happening, we needed like a safe pair of hands. Okay. Someone who didn't think they were going to be there for 15 years. Someone who knew they were going to come in, do 2 or 3 years. We still do have a decent enough squad. It's worse now. But back then, we still had Ramsey. We still had, you know, Welbeck. You know, he was a useful part of our squad back then. We had attacking options. I thought Ancelotti was the guy to come in. Emery came in. I just looked at what happened at PSG and the kind of style that he played. I just thought, it's not going to work. I think we had a bit of a new manager bounce for a few weeks. You know, we went unbeaten for a while and then it just fell to shit.
Got a great podcast.
Thank you.
Drugs obviously do have an effect in football and footballers. It's been the make and break of some of their careers.
Mm-hmm. We've done an episode actually on performance enhancing drugs, which kind of touches on that a little bit. It's interesting. We spoke about football and in terms of performance enhancing drugs, you don't get much of it in football because there's so much money involved and there's so much sponsorship.
Yeah.
And if you take away the integrity of the sport, they lose all the sponsorship. So they're very careful. You get much more in athletics and boxing and stuff, but. In terms of like footballers, I mean, when we were researching that episode, I was looking at footballers. I forgot Adrian Mutu, Chelsea.
Right.
He was a cokehead.
Yeah.
And that only came out afterwards. You think, fuck, that's crazy.
Yeah. Well, then you look back at things like, you know, Maradona and Gascoigne, you know, when they played each other in Italy, they both said to each other, we're both fucked. Like, I'm fucked, mate. And he said to him, yeah, I'm fucked too.
They're sad cases, man. Yeah. Both of them are proper sad cases. I mean, I saw a video the other day, Maradona's still on it. Pitch side. They had a thing, I think it was for Argentina, it was like a charity thing, where like people would sort of coordinate themselves to stand in front of cameras, and they were quite clearly giving him a little bump.
Christ. Very sad.
Man, I mean, you look at like the Tuesday Club at Arsenal, you know, some of them made it, some of them didn't. You look at like Ray Parlour, I don't want to say he was on drugs, but he was definitely drinking a lot. Tony Adams as well.
Yeah, Paul Merson. I mean,
Paul Merson's an interesting one because he didn't really have much of an England career.
No.
And you think, how good could he have been?
Yeah.
If it wasn't the drinking, the drugs, and also the gambling for Paul. But and I look at Ravel Morrison, came through at United, and he's supposed to have had some drug problems as well. He was supposed to be like the most talented teenager of his career, of his generation, sorry. He was supposed to be like the most talented English kid that those coaches had ever seen. Lost drugs. And I think it's an interesting one, because I think now it seems like they're kind of in an environment where they're kind of sheltered from all that. But I think definitely there was a period, 90s and maybe noughties, where people could just slip into that. And you think, how many careers were lost, you know?
Yeah, it was really interesting about, you know, something I really did want to talk to you today was about the fact that, you know, you've been doing this podcast about drugs, and there is, as we said, a lot of drugs in football. We've heard there's lots of rumours out there, you know, that obviously we don't want to say anything, but, you know, various footballers who have had downfalls because of that. So it was definitely something I wanted to speak to, and it is interesting when you, some of these stories you don't hear about till a long time after.
I think there's going to be more as well. I mean, yeah. I think about Arsenal. There was rumours around a few players at the end of Wenger's career. Rositsky was one. Always injured, and it sometimes was a bit weird. And I, you know, you read these conspiracy theories, and people sort of say, "Well, the thing is, you know, if you're not in a matchday squad, you're not tested by the Premier League." So,
right,
whether it's performance enhancers or recreational drugs, coke, whatever. That people wouldn't know it if you're not in a matchday squad, if you're supposedly injured. Another one is Jack Wilshere. Now, Jack grew up in Hitchin, just down the road from me. I've never met him properly. I've got friends who've met him. I could never claim that he's a drug user. I do know he was a bit of a drinker.
Right.
He liked a night out. I mean, quite funnily, I remember there was a nightclub in Stevenage called Chicago's. The night that he made his debut for England at 17... You know, I think it was like Thursday or Friday night, big queue outside Chicago's. He turns up in the flashiest car you've ever seen.
Right.
Straight up to the door. "All right, mate, I'm coming in. Who are you?" "I'm Jack Wilshere. You might have just seen me. I was playing for England tonight." "Oh, yeah. Made your debut." "Yeah. At 17. "Yeah. You obviously can't come in." Right. "You're famous for being 17. Like, of course you can't come in a nightclub." But so, they're two that I wonder about. I think there's probably loads more. I think it would be interesting if it does come out, if that was the case. I know that if I was 18 years old, earning 30, 40 grand a year, when I was 18, 19 years old, I was earning 14 grand a year.
Yeah.
And I still wanted to spend it on gear.
Yes.
So if you stick a zero on the end of that, I'm sure I would have wanted more of it, you know? So. Right.
I will say, though, of course, we're not slandering anyone on this podcast.
Not slandering anyone. No. I'm talking about rumours.
I'm covering my back. Yeah, of course. These are rumours that are out there. Sure. And
where there's been rumours about it, so who knows?
Yes. Well, Jacob, thanks very much for coming on the podcast, my man. It's really appreciated. You don't go away empty-handed, of course. Everybody gets a little treat for coming
here. Mentioned this?
You're taking home your very own Tony Adams.
Oh, yes. This is, mate, so, I'm moving out, so this is going to take pride of place on the mantelpiece.
And hopefully you haven't already got it. I've got you a Adidas Retro.
Oh, my God. Is that the Bruce Banana?
That's the Bruce Banana for you.
Mate, you legend. Thank you so much.
No problem at all. It's the proper Adidas remake, so it's all kosher.
That's beautiful. Thanks so much,
No problem at all. No problem at all. top man. Best of luck for next season.
Appreciate
Hopefully
it.
It'll be good, you know, fresh start, Arteta. And best of luck to you, mate, for the new show.
Appreciate
Very
it.
Much looking forward to seeing it.
Cheers, man.
Fantastic first guest to have on our podcast.
Appreciate it, man.
Started
Appreciate
at the beginning, Arsenal. It's not going to be AFC Bournemouth next week. Don't be thinking that. Don't go thinking we're doing them all in order. It's all going to be very sporadic. We'll hopefully have you back at some time in the future.
Love to, mate.
When you're on another Invincibles run.
Yeah. We might be waiting a while.
Nice one. Thanks very much, mate.
Cheers.
A big thank you once again to my first guest of the series, Jay Capourley. What a fantastic first guest as well. Brilliant. Thanks very much, mate. If you enjoyed the podcast, then good. That's what I made it for. We've got plenty more episodes to come this series, so why don't you subscribe and you'll get the rest of the episodes coming straight to you on Spotify, Apple, Amazon Music, wherever you get your podcasts, essentially. And hey, if you want to see more content, why don't you give us a follow on the old socials? You can find us on Twitter and Instagram with the same handle. It's at ComTalkFootyPod. That's at ComTalkFootyPod. You'll find us, as I said, on Instagram and Twitter. As for me, you can find me on Twitter at SammyBoyMichael. Until next time, where our guest will be John Matthews, my good friend John, talking all things Southampton. I want to say thank you for listening. And as I said, if you enjoyed, you can subscribe. But at the very least, why not tell a mate about it who you think might enjoy it too? I'm Sam Michael, and you've been listening to Comedians Talking About Football. Until next time, cheers.
Podcast Network.